الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد. وبعد. So, where did we stop last time? Oh, we didn't finish that. We finished it. طيب, so what's next? Yeah, my notes. You need them? Have you notes, I mean? طيب, what we concluded last time is that all of the conditions يعني, that the fuqaha laid down for accepting ahad reports, يعني, except for the five conditions that we mentioned earlier, all of them يعني, are not and we are rejecting those conditions. You weren't here last time, were you? Yeah, you were here the time before. Yeah, so we discussed some more conditions, and also from the Maliki madhab, and we concluded that we still have our old ranking of the sources of the Sharia, Quran and Sunnah together. And what we mean by Sunnah here is mutawatir and ahad that meets the five conditions. Okay. And then ijma' and qiyas. Okay. We talked about the possibility of qiyas coming before ahad reports, and we rejected that notion. Although, as I said, you will find it among some of the later Ahnaf or Hanafi scholars. Later, not earlier. Shakallah. That was the third? I lost track somewhere. Hamakallah. So, what we want to talk about now is really the relationship now between mutawatir and ahad, and the way we're going to approach it is to talk about what's the level of knowledge that ahad hadith convey. Remember before when we talked about the levels of knowledge, when we talked about mutawatir, we talked about what level of knowledge does mutawatir achieve. What were the basic three levels that we talked about? Naif, that's the answer to the question. We talked about levels of knowledge. We talked about three basic levels, and we broke them into different. We broke them into five, I believe. What were the three? Okay. Van. Shak. I had a handout in English about this, but I think you did. You get it? Or? Because I passed that in the mosque, and the lecture in the mosque.
I didn't get that one.
Yeah. Well, I look for it, it's not here. But yaqeen is certainty. Dhan is presumptive or speculative knowledge. And shak is what?
Doubt.
And yaqeen is divided into two categories. What are they? Quickly. This is the best thing about, instead of lectures having classroom, you get a lot of time just waiting for the students to speak. Now?
نظري
وضروري. This one is how did we translate it last time?
نظري. It's probably not here.
Immediate. نظري is what? It's also called, by the way, المكتسب. نظري. What did we call it last time? It's a good. No, not there. نظري here means مكتسب. يعني not immediate.
Pardon me? I have a paper over there. There is no certain
word I get. Okay. So we're still stuck with that. And then we had two. One is preponderance of the evidence. يعني الراجح. Well, the other one is then the lesser view. And we said for Sharia, nothing below this is acceptable for Sharia. Nothing below Dhan al-Rajah, or preponderance of the evidence. Yes, yeah, speculative or presumptive, yeah. They mean about the same. Okay, the question is now about Ahad Hadith. Now, first of all, obviously we cannot throw all Ahad reports into one and say where they're going to fall in here. We have to distinguish between those Ahad reports that meet the five conditions that we talked about. Now, remember the five conditions, that the chain is unbroken, every narrator is adil or person of integrity, and also person of proficiency, and there's no adla or hidden defect, hidden damaging defect, and no shudud or contradicting stronger sources. Okay. So what we're talking about here, basically, we're not talking about ahad hadith, ahad reports in general, but we really want to concentrate on ahad reports that meet these five conditions. In other words, acceptable ahad reports. And what level, so the question is, and it's a very important question actually in Usul al-Fiqh, is that what level of knowledge do these hadith convey? You have five choices. Pick any one.
Should be one of the five?
Should be one of the first three, why? Yeah, obviously we already know that they use it as hujjah, so we know already that it's going to be one of these top three, right? Yeah. Okay, there's three opinions about where they fall. The first one says that the Ahad Hadith gives them or then the knowledge, even with corroborating evidence. Corroborating. Okay, now I'm going back to the way the Usuliyin deal with this. Corroborating evidence, this is Qura'an. Yeah, we'll talk about what is Qura'an in a second. Okay. Second category, the second opinion is that it gives yaqeen, or yaqeen also they call it ilm, gives certainty or knowledge with the Qura'an. Okay. And here actually we're talking about reports in general, as we're going to see. Okay. And the last one is that Ahad yields Yaqeen or M. Period. Okay, let's deal with the first opinion there. This first opinion was originated by the Mu'tazila, in the 2nd century. Okay. It originated with them, but then some of the later Usuliyin, they picked it up. For example, Al-Ghazali picked up this idea, and also some of the later Hanafis. Okay. Now, there's some scholars, for example, Ibn Jibreen, they argue that the reason that these people have this opinion is that mostly these people are philosophers or mutakallimeen. Okay, they are not specialists in hadith. So they're not really that familiar with how hadith was preserved and what are the principles of ulum al-hadith and so on. Had they been perhaps more familiar with ulum al-hadith and how hadith was preserved, the history of hadith, probably they would not come to this conclusion. But since they are philosophers and they're basing their opinion basically on rational or aqli arguments, they come to this conclusion. And Al-Ghazali himself also is one of those people who was not familiar, very very well familiar with the history of hadith and so on.
Who's Ibn Jibreen?
Abdullah Ibn Jibreen, your teacher of Aqidah in Jamaat al-Imam. That's his master's dissertation. Ibn Jibreen has a master's dissertation on and a hadith al-Ahad, but I don't remember the name of it exactly. Yeah. In fact, Al-Ghazali, and unfortunately also some of the later muhaddithin were also affected by this, some of the later muhaddithin. But as we'll see, they don't mean it in the same way. For example, An-Nawawi comes to a similar opinion, and also Ibn al-Athir, but inshallah, next time we'll see that they do not mean it in the same way that the philosophers mean it. In fact, Al-Ghazali completely rejects the idea that Ahad Hadith could lead to ilm. Completely rejects it. Well, he has a problem because some of the earlier scholars said that Ahad Hadith leads to ilm. So he had to reinterpret what the earlier scholars were saying. In other words, he found all the earlier scholars as saying that Ahad Hadith leads to ilm, and he's of this opinion that it doesn't lead to ilm, so therefore he had to figure out some way to explain what the earlier scholars were saying. So he did it by two means. In Al-Mustasfa he said that, number one, what they mean by ilm, they don't mean ilm in this sense of yaqeen, but what they mean by ilm is that you have to apply it. And al-amal, or the acting by it, is obligatory. Or he said what they mean by ilm is dhan. That's the way Al-Ghazali got around the fact that the earlier scholars said that. And he absolutely refuses to admit that Ahad Hadith could lead to ilm. And the only way that he could reconcile his view with the earlier scholars, including the leader of his madhab, Imam Shafi'i, was to reinterpret what they said. Now, he doesn't bring any evidence. Obviously, if you're going to say, for example, that Imam Shafi'i, when he said ilm, what he means is done, or he means it means you have to apply it, you have to bring some evidence from their statements or some kind of evidence to show that that's what they meant. He doesn't offer any evidence. And he's just trying to get away from this this idea that Ahad reports could lead to ilm.
What's the reason?
Pardon me?
What's the reason for nothing accepting that?
What's the reason that he came to this conclusion? Yeah, in other words, why he came to this conclusion. The basic reason, actually, is that he's been affected by the philosophers and al-mutakallimin. And he's been affected by their views so much that he cannot... Yani even his own people of his own madhab, he can't see what they're saying. And he has to reinterpret what they say. Okay, what are some of the arguments for this opinion? What could be some of the arguments for this opinion? They're saying, ahad reports which are less than mutawatir, and it cannot give us certain knowledge. They give a number of evidences, we'll not go over all of them. Number one, first thing you should notice about their evidence is that they cannot give any nusus, they cannot give any verse from the Quran or any hadith of the Prophet ﷺ or any statement of the Sahaba to support their point of view. Okay, they cannot. So they have to rely upon purely aqli or rational arguments, which was their custom anyway. So what are some, yani just thinking in general, what would be some arguments to say that hadith which are ahad or narrations, yani which are not mutawatir, yani do not give you certain ilm, but give you then, give you presumptive knowledge or speculative knowledge? Any ideas? Number one, yeah. See it?
Saying one or two narrators cannot give the absolute picture of something. So they, what they saw or did must have come weakness.
One person cannot give the absolute knowledge of what he heard?
Yeah. He could have missed something.
No, there's a difference between saying that he could not give the absolute knowledge and saying that he could have forgotten. Okay, so that's their first argument. They're saying that ahad reports comes from a limited number of individuals. These people are human beings. They are apt to forget. They're apt to make mistakes. And they're even apt to commit lies. Okay. Or to lie, I guess, not commit lies. So their first argument is that ahad reports come from human beings, individuals, who make mistakes, who forget, who lie. What's the response to that?
Those conditions apply to... Mm-hmm.
Exactly. What we've done is that we said, look, we're not accepting all ahad reports, but we're putting very firm conditions upon the ahad reports. And we're checking the narrators. We're making sure that these narrators are not people who lie. We're making sure that these narrators are not people who make mistakes, or many mistakes. And we're making sure in their narrations that they are not mistaken by checking them with other narrations and checking them with stronger sources. So again, it goes back to that point that they are not really that well familiar with the principles of hadith, the science of hadith, because if they were, and they would not make that argument. What's another argument that you might hear? By the way, regarding this category, it was for some time a dead madhab, but it's being revised. And you will hear some of the same arguments nowadays, and against ahad hadith, ahad reports. And I've read some books written recently where they give exactly the same reasoning of why any ahad reports should not be accepted as conveying ilm. And one of them is that they come from human beings who make mistakes and forget and tell lies and so on. What's another?
Maybe they would say there is a problem in the chain because it's ahad and it's sunni in the text. So this is two things together.
Funny
is the
dalala. Dhanni here in the Dilal, this is not referring to the Dilal, this is referring to Thabut. Dhanni Thabut. Okay, another argument that you will hear that they give is that, look, if these things gave ilm or yaqeen, certainty, then how come we find in many cases the scholars of hadith differing about one hadith? Some of them saying it's sahih, others are saying it's hasan, and others are saying da'if, and so on. So this is proof that obviously these reports do not give yaqeen. And at the most, they can give dhan. Again, as I said, you can find this in modern writings nowadays. What's the response to that?
What
in alam? So what do you do in that case?
Huh?
What do you do in that case?
We see that evidence and
okay, exactly. That if there is a difference of opinion, that's not harmful in the sense that you can always look to see that the evidence of both sides. If someone says the hadith is sahih, for example, another one says it's weak, you can look to the evidence of both sides and you'll see which side has the strongest weight to it. So just the fact that there's different opinions is not the fact that if you study it, you'll see that one is definitely stronger than the other, and the one that is definitely stronger can give you the opinion that is definitely stronger can give you certainty about that opinion. Also, if that's true, by the way, for limited number of ahad hadith, because in general, for the majority of hadith, there's not a big difference of opinion among the muhaddithin. And for the majority of hadith, there's not a big difference of opinion among the muhaddithin. In fact, to find big difference of opinion, maybe there's... The difference of opinion is not one, or in general, the difference of opinion is not one where they accept or reject the hadith. In other words, one scholar said this hadith is acceptable, the other one said it's rejected. Usually the difference of opinion between the muhadithin is one person said it's sahih and the other one said it's hasan. Both cases it's acceptable, it doesn't matter. Or you'll find some scholars saying the hadith is fabricated, yani mudu', while the other one said it's very weak, da'if jiddan or munkar or something like that. And in any case, the hadith is going to be rejected. So these types of difference of opinion, which is the common difference of opinion among the muhadithin, these have no effect whatsoever. Because they do not affect whether or not we're going to accept the hadith or reject the hadith. Okay, a third argument that they give is that if such hadith gave certainty, yaqeen, then why is it that we find so many of those hadith contradicting each other? And if he has ta'arud between the hadith. And if all of them are giving yaqeen, why should they be contradicting each other? Again, that's another argument that you will find, that you'll hear among the yani it comes from the Mu'tazila in early years. But again, you'll hear it again repeated nowadays. What's the response to that? No response? Believe. Three stage, three squares or swans.
This is a big claim. I doubt that they can prove. And if they prove it with some hadith, there must be a way to conclude that one hadith is weaker than the other, or one is stronger. And cannot be that two authentic hadith contradict each other, except in the rare hadith. One or two.
And in those rare cases, what?
Huh?
In those rare cases, what? Hey, and in those, okay, so let's, what was your three-stage argument? Number one, number one, their argument may not be true. Okay? That there's a lot of contradictory hadith. Number two, if it is true, yes, you were saying?
So there must be one stronger than the other. Yeah, probably they don't even check the chain.
Okay, usually when there are contradictory hadith, it's usually the case that one is stronger than the other. So it's not really a contradiction between two authentic hadith, but it's usually a contradiction between an authentic hadith and a weak hadith. Number three? Okay, and if there is some contradiction, it might be based on the fact that one action abrogated the other action. Okay. And number four, which is actually the most common case, is that what appears to be a contradiction usually is not a contradiction. And in other words, they take two hadith and they look at those two hadith and they think this must be contradictory. But if you study the hadith closer, you'll find that in fact they were not contradictory. That the Prophet ﷺ said one thing, for example, at one time for a specific reason, and he said something else contrary to that another time for a different reason. And in fact, even Qutayba's book, Ta'wil Mukhtalif al-Hadith, is actually a refutation of the Mu'tazila and the Shia and their claims that there are so many contradicting hadith, ahad hadith. Tayyib? Okay, a fourth argument that they give, they said that there is ijma'ah, okay, that the one who rejects ahad hadith does not become kafir and does not become fasiq, does not become an unbeliever or an evildoer. If that's the case, then it must be true that these hadith do not give yaqeen, amn. Because if the hadith gave yaqeen, certainty, then if you reject it, you should be at least fasiq or kafir. Right? So what's the response to that?
What's the evidence? If you reject, you're not fasiq.
Okay, yeah, they said that there is ijma' on that. So that's the first point. There isn't ijma'. You will find some scholars who say that if someone rejects a hadith which is sahih, even though it's ahad, he's kafir. And you will find scholars who say that. May not be the strongest opinion, but you will find scholars who say that. So, number one, there isn't a ijma' on that point. What else? How many stages do we have in the response? So that's always the first stage, by the way. What you said isn't true. Second stage.
Somebody can argue that if, as what you just said, if somebody was told about how the hadith is finished and then given the proof, and he still rejects what the hadith is saying, that he might be fasiq or extreme kafir.
Now, okay, it goes back to what we said earlier about Amn al-yaqini al-dhururi and Amn al-yaqini al-nazari. Amn al-yaqini al-dhururi, this is known to everyone. But Amn al-yaqini al-nazari, in most cases, just known to the specialist. So that's why if someone rejects something which is Amn al-yaqini, al-nazari, then he will be excused because he might not be from the specialist and therefore he doesn't know. So therefore, yani, he's not made. They do not call him kafir because of what he rejected. Okay, those are just some of the arguments for this opinion here that ahad hadith, even with qara'in, yani the most they will give is dhan. Okay, you can see right here that it came from the 2nd century. And in other words, it was not the opinion of the scholars of the first century. And all the evidence that they give are aqli or rational arguments which can be refuted, like what we did. And there's others that they have, but these are probably their four strongest. And I chose their four strongest and I just ignored their other weaker ones. So our conclusion is that there's no evidence whatsoever for this opinion. Any questions about that opinion? There's no evidence, there's no real evidence for that opinion, but as I said, unfortunately, in some books written today, you'll find the same kind of reasoning, the same kind of arguments from people, not from people who call themselves Mu'tazila. There's just a few of those left who actually call themselves. Actually, they never call themselves Mu'tazila. What do they call themselves? Mu'tazila, they call themselves Ahl al-Tuhid wal-Adl. Nowadays they call themselves, they claim to be from Ahl al-Sunnah wal-Jama'ah, but they're making these arguments. Yani influenced by the mutakallimin, yani you can excuse them, because if you study Usul al-Fiqh, and the first book you go to is Al-Mustasfa by Al-Ghazali, and that's the last book you study, you'll come away, you'll walk away with this idea. So let's do away with that. Okay, the second opinion is that yani the Ahad Hadith can give yaqeen, can give certain knowledge, but only with yani qara'in, only with corroborating evidence. This is the opinion of Ibn Qudama and Ibn Aqil of the Hanafis, of the Hanbali. Notice how quickly they respond. Well, Al-Amidi and Al-Razi of the Shafi'is, and Al-Baqilani and Ibn al-Hajib of the Malikis. So Ibn al-Hajib, there's a long discussion about what madhab he actually belonged to. From with that Malikis here. Al-Baqilani, Al-Qadi Al-Baqilani of the Malikis. I put them here with the Hanafis, with the Malikis, so there's two from each. Pardon me?
Ibn al-Hajib.
Is it Ibn al-Hajib? Okay. Ibn al-Hajib. So their argument is that the report by itself may not give ilm, but if it is and is surrounded, or this is the envelope theory of, if it is enveloped by a Qur'an corroborating evidence, it will become ilm yaqeen. The Qur'an that they talk about are two types. I'll write them in English and let you figure out what they must be in Arabic. Connected and unconnected. Which are what? Munfasila wa muttasila. Oops. I'm about to give it an American English T. Connected and unconnected. Yani, what they mean by that is connected to the essence of the report itself, or not connected to the essence of the report itself. Okay. Those that are connected, and this is similar to, by the way, what we talked about before in Mutawatir. Those that are connected, some of them relate to the narrators, some of them relate to what is narrated. Some of them relate to the listeners, the person who receives the report. Okay. So the Quran, yani with respect to related to the narrators themselves, they say, for example, people of the highest level of proficiency and adl, or people who are living in different areas or people who are different opinions, they narrate exactly the same thing. This is a type of Quran that gives support to the Ahad report and raises it to the level of yaqeen. With respect to what is narrated, and what is being narrated, if it is consistent with the type of speech that the Prophet ﷺ used to have, and his speech was different from the common folk in its eloquence and so on, and also it is consistent with the Sharia, it is consistent with the Quran and consistent with Mutawatir and so forth. These things are a type of Quran that could move the Ahad report to become Ilm al-Yaqini, or definitive knowledge. And with respect to what is related to the listeners, if the one who hears the report is a scholar of hadith, he knows about the narrators, he knows about the narrators in the chain that is being in the chain that is given to him, and he knows about how to pass on hadith, to hamil al-hadith, and make sure that each one heard it from the person he's narrating from, and so forth, then this report could become for him also yaqeen. Okay? So, and if you just stop right there, it seems that this madhab is saying that some reports are yaqeen for some people, while they may not be yaqeen for other people. And they might be certain knowledge for some people, while not certain knowledge for other people. We get that from their last one there, saying that one of the connected Quran is related to the listeners who hear the report.
The listener actually, the narrator.
Pardon me?
I mean, the listener.
The listener received it, and if he passes it on, he will become a narrator also. But here they're talking about the one who receives it in particular. No? The last one doesn't make sense?
Yeah,
they're talking about for the listener himself. That if he is a scholar of hadith, for example, he will know that this hadith is correct, and so therefore it is yaqeen for him.
Oh, not the
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about at the time when he receives it. The one who receives it. Yeah. But what about unconnected? Unfasil al-Qur'an. What could these be? Unconnected. This is not the Zellner seemingly unrelated model. Unconnected. Number one, for example, is that if the ummah as a whole accepts the report, okay, the ummah accepts, continuously accepts the report, by narrating it, by applying it, and even if they don't apply it, then by making ta'wil for it. No. Ahad. An Ahad report that the scholars accept.
We have seen that number one, they have not accepted.
Number one who?
Like, give bad knowledge.
They still, number one, I'm sorry if I didn't make that point clear. The people in number one, they said that it doesn't give yaqeen, but you have to act by it. So in other words, they are accepting the report, but they're just saying it doesn't give yaqeen, it gives dhan. But they are accepting it. Yeah, he said it maybe means that just you apply it. Doesn't give Also related to that, similar to that, is they say that the books or the hadith in the Sahihain, in the two Sahih. Okay, the hadith in the two Sahihs, Sahih al-Bukhari and Sahih Muslim.
Okay. Both two or one?
No, in the two. No, it doesn't mean in both of them. No, in the two. In Sahih Bukhari or Sahih Muslim. And basically the principle here is the same. That it is, these are hadith that the Ummah has continuously accepted as correct. And this is a type of Quran that they will accept to raise the report to Al Yaqini. Also, what is what the Hanafi scholars call mashhur. Some people would say that it being mashhur is the type of Quran that raises it to Al Yaqini. And also, they say, and if it has, this actually should not be, this last one should not be, in my opinion, unconnected, but they always put it in there unconnected. If it has a chain of gold, in other words, the isnad is something like Imam Malik from Nafi, from Ibn Umar, and it's chains that are very well known to be the best chains around.
Pardon me?
What the hadith is just talking about something being
happened
and
happened.
Sounds
good.
It may not be sufficient by itself, but it sounds good. Because many of the statements of the yani al-Hakim that people narrate as hadith of the Prophet, so maybe someday they'll be found as true. So it's not any sufficient evidence.
Not
no, you said scientific. The last thing you said is scientific.
No,
yeah. But actually, what are we actually describing here? Especially the connected Quran. And in essence, what they're describing, especially here, a little bit here, is that they are describing reports that meet the five conditions. And so the only difference between this madhab and this madhab is a matter of wording. There, in fact, is no difference between these two madhab. Because the last madhab says it gives yaqeen, but they're talking about when it meets the five conditions. Okay. Sometimes they don't state it explicitly that this is what they mean, but it's obvious that this is what they mean. No one, no scholar ever said that any ahad report, and even if it comes from liars or whatever, gives yaqeen. No one ever said that. What they mean by that when they say it gives yaqeen or it gives ilm is when it meets the five conditions. Which is, these five conditions are in fact a type of Qura'in that these scholars would accept. So in fact there's really no difference of opinion between the second madhab here and the third. They are the same. It is a difference of wording. The people in the third madhab, and the third madhab here include almost Jamhur al-Salaf, all of the early scholars, including Imam Ahmed. Imam Ahmed, there's two different narrations from him, but as Ibn Taymiyyah has shown, this is the correct opinion of Imam Ahmed. Imam Malik, Imam al-Shafi'i, the companions of Abu Hanifa, Dawood al-Dahri, and so on. In other words, this is the opinion of the Salaf, the early scholars. in Islam. And in fact, any other opinion, especially that first one that I raised, is nothing but any bid'ah or innovation in fact. That the Ahad reports, if they meet the conditions, then they in fact give yaqeen, or they give in. Now, Ibn al-Qayyim in a book called Mukhtasar Sawa'iq al-Mursala, he gives 20 evidences or 20 proofs that Ahad reports give yaqeen. 20 reports, 20 pieces of evidence. Okay, I'm not going to go through those 20 pieces of evidence. It is in the original, in the Mukhtasar, which is, I think, the only that's published. It's also been reproduced in another and a number of other books. Ibn Hazm's proof for this opinion, it's a little bit long. I tried to condense it a little bit here, but it's a very nice proof. According to Ibn Hazm, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran promises to preserve the dhikr. Well, the dhikr in the Quran, as we talked about earlier, and what does it mean in that verse in particular, inna nahnu nazalna dhikr wa inna lahu lahafidhun? You weren't here in the beginning of the and in any case, the dhikr most likely, back beyond the shadow of a doubt, as we say in English, includes the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. The sunnah of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is a type of revelation. It is an essential part of the sharia. So when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala promises to preserve the dhikr, also He is preserving the sunnah, which is, as I said, an essential part of the sharia.
Yeah, because it's
when I saw the
it's
going to be what are they saying when they say that? They are saying, for example, if you suppose you said about the Quran, forget about Ahad reports. Suppose you said about the Quran that it is not an yaqini, it is dhanni. What are you actually saying when you say that? What are you actually saying when something is dhanni, even if you're talking about dhann al-rajah?
See, what Quran
says,
it is dhanni
thabut. I'm just saying that, okay, these people, so many people nowadays also, they're saying Ahad reports are dhanni thabut. Okay, we said here it's wrong, but I'm saying that when you say that Ahad reports are dhanni thabut, what are you actually saying? And let's take it to the Quran. Suppose you said that about the Quran. You said the Quran is dhanni thabut, and it is confirmed on a presumptive basis, not on a certain basis. What are you actually saying? Okay, you're saying that it possibly has been altered. It is not, it's possibly. Okay, you're not saying for sure, but you're saying it's possibly been altered, possibly has been changed, and it has not been preserved properly. Okay? So if you say that about the dhikr, which includes the sunnah of the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, or the sunnah of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, then in fact you are contradicting the Quran. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has promised to preserve the dhikr. So if you say it is dhanni thabut instead of yaqini, you are contradicting the Quran. Because you are saying it, possibly it has not been preserved properly. Okay? Also, the people who say that ahad hadith is not yaqini but is dhanni, and then they say at the same time that you have to apply it. Okay? Those people, yani, like the first madhab that I raised, they said the hadith or ahad hadith or dhanni, and it's speculative, but you have to apply it. So what they're saying is that it could be wrong, could have been altered, could have been changed, but you have to apply it. So what they're saying is it could be bid'ah, It could be dhalala, but you have to apply it. That's what they're saying actually. When they say that it's dhanni, but you have to apply it. Yeah, the first madhab that I erased. That's a good question. See, the Mu'tazila and also Al-Ghazali and those who followed the way of Al-Ghazali, were you here that day when we gave Hujjat al-Ahad, where we gave the proof that you have to follow Ahad? It was maybe, 2 weeks ago? It was in Ramadan, yeah. Okay. Yani we gave lots of proofs that you have to follow Ahad. There's no way you can avoid following, not following Ahad. We gave proofs from the Quran, we gave proofs from the Prophet, and we gave proofs from the Sahaba, ijma' of the Sahaba. Okay. So these Mu'tazila and Al-Ghazali, what can they say? They cannot say that you don't have to follow Ahad. There's no way they could say that. Because there's overwhelming proof that you have to. So they had to figure out some way that, okay, you have to follow Ahad, but you cannot say it is certain knowledge. And the only way they could do that is by saying, yani explicitly that, it is not certain knowledge, but you have to follow it. That's the only way that they could do it. Now the reason the Mu'tazila say it's not certain knowledge, we'll get to that later. The reason they said that basically is because they distinguish aqidah, or what you believe, from what you practice. They distinguish the two. In fact, the real reason is that there's some things in ahadith which they call ahad. Actually not ahad, they are mutawatir, but there are some things in ahadith which are ahad, according to them, which they don't want to believe in. And it goes against their madhab. Yeah, I don't know how to say it. I mean, how did they say it? They just said it, yani. They were very brave. No, they said it is wajib, you have to apply.
So why
is
it kind of wajib?
Yeah. Well, one of their arguments for why you have to apply it, you don't have to believe in it, but you have to apply it, is they said that all of the Sharia, all of the Islamic law, yani, is to give maslaha for the human beings. Okay? So then they make analogy, qiyas, on other aspects of maslaha. For example, if you're sitting in a house and someone comes in the house and says the house is on fire, you have to get out. And it is your maslaha to get out of the house. Okay? And it is in your interest to get out of the house. They make the same analogy by hadith. They say that yani, when the person comes into your house and tells you you have to get out of your house, the house is on fire, you do not know for sure that what he's saying is true. Okay? So you don't know what he's saying is true, but you better apply what he says. That's the same kind of reasoning. They make analogy between those different situations. That look, ahad hadith, we don't know that it's true, but since yani the Sharia is based on maslaha, and we find maslaha to be existing in situations like that where we're not sure the thing is true, but we better apply it. That's how they argue that you should apply it.
So then you have to apply
it. Yeah, you have to apply it. Yeah. But you don't believe in it. You don't say with certainty that that's true. I gave the example earlier of about Azab al-Qabr, about the punishment in the grave. They say in the Salat, at the end of the Salat, the Prophet ﷺ used to make dua asking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, or seeking refuge from the punishment in the grave. So they say you say this, okay, but at the same time they deny there's anything as the punishment in the grave. Okay? And that's one of the, to wrap this up a little bit, there's some reasons why, and this third opinion is the only opinion actually which is acceptable. Okay. The first reason is because the Sahaba and the Tabi'in, they never knew any difference between what came to them between Mutawatir, from Mutawatir and from Ahad. Both of them, they consider them as long as they met their conditions, both of them, they consider them certain knowledge, and yani, that they have to believe in and they have to apply. Thus, the idea that yani, these types of reports are not certain knowledge, as I said, this is a type of bid'ah, and it goes against the way of the Sahaba and the Tabi'een. Secondly, as I said again, the idea that you have to apply something but you do not believe in it, and it leads to the ridiculous type of conclusion, such as seeking refuge from Azab al-Qabr at the same time that you do not believe in Azab al-Qabr. Thirdly, also what they're saying doesn't make any sense, because yani, when you say that something is wajib, because they have a point, we'll discuss this later. They said that for something to be a matter of aqidah, something to be a matter of belief, it has to be up here in yaqeen. Okay? So for aqidah, you need to be up here in yaqeen. For actions, it can be dhanni. That's what they claim. Okay? But they're forgetting, yani they are separating actions from aqidah, which is a mistake. Because if you say that something is wajib, okay, if you say that an act is wajib, what are you saying? Or an act is mustahab, or an act is haram. What are you saying? The sharia, okay. What else? They have proof, but it's dhanni. We said yani a preponderance. If you make ijtihad and the only evidence you have is something which is dhanni, but it's dhanni rajah, then you have to follow it. That's okay. But can you say something is wajib and that statement has nothing to do with aqidah? Can you do that? If you say something is wajib, you're saying that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala loves this act. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants the believers to do this act. That's aqidah. There's no way you can separate this statement or these things from aqidah. So there's no way you can say when it comes to actions we'll have dhanni proofs, but in aqidah we have to have yani yaqini. And the fourth point, summing up, I said, so to sum up, why this opinion has to be the opinion that you follow. Okay. The last point is that something unique about these five conditions. You know, as opposed to Usul al-Fiqh, where if you study Usul al-Fiqh, mostly because of the influence of the philosophers and the mutakallimeen, there's yani different opinion about almost anything in Usul al-Fiqh. Okay. But the interesting thing about these five conditions is that they are agreed upon by every scholar of hadith. Doesn't matter if he's Hanafi or Hanbali or whatever, yani muhaddithin, all of the muhaddithin agree upon these conditions. So if a hadith meets these five conditions, then by default, if a hadith meets these five conditions, then by default it comes under this category right here, that the ummah as a whole accepts it. If a hadith meets those five conditions, then it means automatically that the ummah as a whole accepts it. Because all of the muhaddithin agree upon that. They are the specialists in the field. And it is obligatory on the non-specialists to follow them. Just like if the fuqaha make ijma' about something, it is obligatory on the non-fuqaha to follow them. So if a hadith meets these five conditions, then in fact we're really talking about this ijma' about that hadith. And therefore for sure it must be ilm al-yaqini.
Any questions about that?
The fourth point, what does that mean?
Why weren't you listening? But the first one is that the...
Ibn
Hazm? No. Oh, we left Ibn Hazm a long time ago. Oh, I didn't say unquote. No, Ibn Hazm was just that first argument that the sunnah is part of the dhikr. Okay. This is the four major reasons why number three is the only logical choice. Okay. And by the way, as I said, number two and number three are actually the same. But number three states it more explicitly. You know, number two leaves the door open for some people to come along and say, oh, well, we don't have those Qur'an. Number one is that the Sahaba and the Tabi'een, they took Ahad reports as al-Yaqini. Therefore, the idea that it's not al-Yaqini is a type of bid'ah. Number two, the idea that something can be dhanni and you must apply it without believing it, it is an invention of the Mu'tazila. And it leads to the ridiculous situation of, for example, asking Allah for refuge from Azab al-Qabr when you don't believe in Azab al-Qabr. Thirdly, there's no way you can distinguish actions from aqidah in this way. If you say something is wajib, it is actually a statement of aqidah. And fourthly, there's ijma' of the muhaddithin on these five conditions. So if a hadith meets these five conditions, ipso facto, that's the expression I was looking for, ipso facto, the ummah as a whole accepts them. Questions? Clear? Everything? This means it's important, conclusion. Tayyib. Now we have a big problem. No, problem is not related to these as such. What's our big problem? What's the last topic we talked about 3 weeks ago that I said we will have to come back to this? 4 weeks ago. 4 weeks. Maybe 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks. Right? Okay, what's the only thing that we gave version 2.0 to? Definition of mutawatir. Okay. What was that definition of mutawatir? Definition of mutawatir version 2.0. It's coming. It's coming. Now. Okay. Our definition of mutawatir at that time, long time ago, we said that in fact, and after dealing with it a little while, we said that something is mutawatir, or mutawatir is a report whose number of narrators and or characteristics of narrators and or characteristics of narration are such that it conveys definitive knowledge to the one who hears it. يعني يفيد العلم اليقين يعني العلم means اليقين all means the same they all mean the same. Well, now we have a problem then. What's our problem? طيب. So that means all we just said here that يعني أحد حديث lead to علم اليقين. So either all أحد حديث are متواتر by this definition, or that this definition doesn't make any sense. Which do you prefer? But this is basically based on Ibn Taymiyyah's definition of mutawatir. It doesn't make any sense when you keep this point in mind. Okay, all ahad reports which are sahih or hasan meet this condition. So therefore, we have to look again to the idea of mutawatir, and we have to reject this definition, version 2.0.
متواتر.
Why do we reject it? We reject it because now we've just discovered that it has no meaning. And according to that definition, there's no difference between mutawatir and ahad. So what are we going to do now? Read it. That's the way science works. That's right. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have to go back to basically the muhaddith concept of mutawatir. The concept of mutawatir according to the muhaddithin. Now, in their concept of mutawatir, what's their definition basically of mutawatir? Yeah, almost. That something has been narrated by so many people in each link that it is impossible for them to have agreed upon an error or to have agreed upon a lie. Okay? So basically they're talking about numbers. Is there anything in that statement that says that it leads to ilm al-yaqini? Okay, the Muhaddithin left that point out. As I said, it was the later Muhaddithin who talked about mutawatir. They left that point out because for the Muhaddithin, as opposed to some of the Usuliyin, they knew already that ahad leads to al-yaqeen. That's been the madhab of the Muhaddithin since the time of the Prophet. And they knew this already, that ahad leads to yaqeen. So therefore they didn't include that idea in their definition of mutawatir. Okay, so what we have now actually is we have a whole bunch of different types of reports, and each report gives a certain level of knowledge or a certain level of confidence. Okay, certain level of knowledge, let's see. Now before, when I had that written up, I said yaqini, ilm yaqini has two types, nadhri wa dharuri. Okay, it's not necessary that there's only two types. That's what the Usuliyin have always said. But for example, in the Quran, there's three types of yaqeen. There's not two types. So therefore, what we're going to do here, and this, by the way, is something you'll never see anywhere else. This is my ijtihad here. So if you want to throw it in the zubala, you may do so. What we have basically is different reports. Some reports are stronger than others, but basically all of them are giving us certain knowledge. But some are stronger than others. For example, we have, this is now from the strongest to the weakest. We have that one we call mutawatir qarni. Okay, or general. Okay, this is like the Quran, where so many people in each generation pass it on that there's no way to have any doubts about it. Okay, each generation passing it on, so forth. There's no question that this type is amn al-yaqini al-dharuri. No one can deny this, and people know it without even realizing they knew it. Then after that we have mutawatir sanadi, or specific. Okay, this is the muhaddith type definition. And it is not as strong as that one up there. Obviously anything which is mutawatir qarni, is above and meets the conditions, obviously, of mutawatir sanadi. But mutawatir sanadi basically is known to the specialist of hadith. And it is, for example, like a Suyuti, 10 narrators in every chain, in every link. I mean, something like that. There's no minimum number, but something of that nature. Okay? Now? Pardon?
Katan,
yeah. Yani, there are at least 300 hadith of this nature. Okay. In the first catalog, in the first category, Mutawatir Qarni, there's no hadith that would fall in that category, no hadith mutawatir in lafz, in wording. But there are plenty mutawatir in meaning. For example, everyone knows the Prophet ﷺ lived in Mecca, he migrated to Medina and so forth. All of these are based on hadith, they all come into this category here. While the specific narrations like the 300 that Kattani records, they would come under this category here. MashaAllah. Now we have a new category. The meaning doesn't make any sense, just ignore. I mean, the name of it doesn't make any sense, just ignore that. Mutawatir Ahadi. Ahadi, I guess. just to be formal there for a second. What do we mean by this? Basically, what we mean by this, how are you supposed to know? I made this up. how are you people supposed to know what I mean by this? What I mean by this is a hadith, which is actually ahad, doesn't come up to this, for example, this level, but it has Quran like this one over here. The ummah accepts it, yani all of the ummah accepts it and so forth, like the hadith in the Sahihain. In other words, there are some Quran that give this level something more than just ahad hadith. Okay. By the definition of mutawatir, according to muhaddithin, it is not mutawatir. But there are some Quran, or corroborating evidence, that give it some more strength. Okay. Okay, and probably the mashur hadith of the Hanafis would go into this category. Okay, it is not mutawatir, but it is not as low as other ahad reports, and therefore we can put it here. There's something that gives it more strength. Okay, and the last one is ahad. What I mean by this one is the one that meets the five conditions. Okay. But has nothing really special to it that will give it any more strength. Now all of them give ilm al-yaqeen. That's the important thing. All of them give ilm al-yaqeen. And the only importance, even from the muhaddith's point of view, from before, the only importance of differentiating between mutawatir and ahad is to show which ones are stronger in case of conflict. And in case there is some conflict or some irreconcilable conflict between two reports, then this kind of thing comes into play. Otherwise, all of them give ilm yaqeen. So the idea actually of mutawatir and Mashhur and Mustafid and Aziz and Aziz and Gharib, and from the beginning, the only real relevance they had is that some reports are stronger than others. So if there is any conflict between them, then the stronger one will take precedence. What do you think? Sounds good. Otherwise, there's no way you cannot take the usul. For example, Ibn Taymiyyah's definition of mutawatir does not meet with the fact that Ibn Taymiyyah has this opinion that ahad reports give ilm yaqeen. Similarly, the usuliyin definition of al-Ghazali that says mutawatir hadith, give al-yaqini, that was okay for him because he was from this first madhab that I raised. But when you see that his madhab on that question was the weaker madhab, that this is the correct madhab, that Ahad reports give yaqeen, then his definition of mutawatir doesn't mean anything. So we have to go back to the muhaddithin's definition of mutawatir, that it's just something basically to show that this report is stronger than other reports. But all of them give al yaqeen. Any questions? Now we have another problem. Another big problem. And this problem goes back to the third week of class now. If you didn't remember this one, for sure you're not going to remember the other one. But this one goes back to the third or fourth week of class. And that is, if this is the case, that Ahad reports give al yaqini, then we have to talk about, again, what is the Qur'an? What are the conditions for the Qur'an? Remember we said we gave three conditions for the Qur'an. And that we'll accept, we'll call something part of the Qur'an if it meets three conditions. What are those three? Pardon? Okay, three conditions for a report to be considered yani, Quran, or something to be considered part of the Quran. Number one, with what the report consistent with Uthman's Masahab, actually. Pardon me? Linguistically or language, grammatically, linguistically correct. Thank you. Let's call that condition A. I'll give you now condition B, and you tell me which one makes more sense. Which one of those two conditions two sets of conditions makes more sense? A or B? Can you read it, by the way? There's only one difference between them. A says mutawatir, consistent with Uthman's Musahaf, and three, linguistically correct. B says the isnad is sahih, two, consistent with Uthman's Musahaf, and three, correct linguistically. Oh, there's a difference. You see, number A says linguistically correct, the other one says correct linguistically. Which one makes more sense? Huh? A makes more sense? Okay, A makes no sense whatsoever. Yani, by definition of mutawatir, regardless of what definition you want to go, yani, by mutawatir you're saying that yani, there's no question that it's correct. It's been narrated by so many people that they did not agree on a lie. They could not have agreed on an error. So why do you have these other two conditions? Makes no sense whatsoever. But the other one is exactly like a sahih hadith. The isnad has to be sahih. That means the chain is unbroken. Everyone is adil and dhabit, proficient in people of integrity. Consistent with Uthman's Musahaf, ma fi shudud. Linguistically correct also means ma fi shudud or illa. Shudud is a special case of, shudud is a special case of illa. So these two, these are pretty much exactly the same conditions as hadith to be sahih. And as we said, a hadith that meets these conditions is al-yaqini. So why would anyone say that these are the conditions for the Quran? Besides the fact that it doesn't make any sense. Let me ask you another question then. You've all heard these before, right? Everyone's heard these before. At least in this class, you heard them. Even before these classes, you've heard these, right? Would you say that there's ijma', that these are the conditions? Who? Us, you mean? No, forget about B for a second. These are my conditions. Would you say that there's ijma' on these three? Why not? No, concerning two and three, nothing. Yani you're talking about a riwayah, whether or not it is consistent, that's something else. But they all say that four to the Quran has to be consistent. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying as conditions. Is there ijma' that these are the conditions for something to be the Quran? Okay, these are what the usuliyin always say. You read the book of usul al-fiqh, you'll find that in the beginning Quran, what is the Quran? They give these three conditions. If you read the specialists in Qura'ah, if you read books about Qura'at al-Quran, you'll find that these are the conditions for many of the specialists in Qura'at al-Quran. For example, Makki ibn Abu Talib in Al-Ibani, he wrote that everything that has been narrated concerning the Qura'at falls into three categories. One category is read today, and in other words, that is the category that is acceptable, and that is the one that has three characteristics, and they are: it is narrated from thaqat or trustworthy narrators back to the Prophet, it is consistent with Arabic, the Arabic language by which the Quran was revealed, and it is consistent with the writing in the Mus'haf. If it contains these three characteristics, it is to be recited, and it is definitively correct, and to be considered truthful, because it has come from ijma' because of the consistency with the writing of the Mus'haf. And the person who denies it becomes a kafir. Well, similar statements can be found by Ibn al-Jaziri in a book he wrote called Munjad al-Muqri'een, and also by Abu Shama al-Maqtasi and al-Murshid al-Wajid. So this also supports our view that also the people of Qura'ah, the specialists in Qura'ah, they also realize that Sahih Hadith, which are Ahad, are also Amn Yaqini, and therefore they are part of the Qur'an. And for the specialists in Qura'ah, except for the later ones who were affected by the Usuliyin, these are not the conditions. But these are the conditions. And this again supports our view, that even the specialists in Qura'ah, they agree with us that Ahad Hadith, leads to Ilm al-Yaqini. So A is out. As I said, A doesn't make any sense anyway. Okay, so what is Qura'at Shahada in this case? Qura'at Shahada, what is Qura'at Shahada, for the Usuliyin they will say it's something which isn't mutawatir, but that's not correct. Qura'at Shahada is either through a weak chain, or it's not correct with Uthman's Musahaf, or it is not correct linguistically.
But the only part is that it should be...
When you define what? Hey, you're talking about a long time ago? Yeah, I'm changing everything now. Hey, that's right. That's what I'm saying that the Usuliyins said. And I'm telling you now, that's why you had to wait to the whole end of the class. See, we were working up to them. I'm telling you now that that's not correct.
But my point is, what I can't understand the second one. First and the fifth.
If it's not sahih, it's either munkar or mudu'. Could be mudu'.
Same thing about the three.
correct, if it's incorrect linguistically,
obviously it will not be part of the Quran. Yeah, okay, but suppose it's something clearly incorrect linguistically. Like, for example, the way I speak Arabic.
So
that means when I speak and you correct me, I can tell you from now on that, hey, you cannot correct me because you cannot say for sure what I'm saying is wrong. Hey, but anyway, I have to correct what I said, Yani. If it is a weak isnad, Yani, for it to be shad, it has to be, Yani, a correct, a sahih isnad. Yeah. That was my mistake.
And we said it has to be correct.
Well, let's hope so anyway, that it's going to be correct.
Most of the shad is missing
too. Almost all of the shad is missing too.
Becomes shadda because
it is not consistent with Uthman's Masahib. Aywa. Everything clear? So from this point, the next point that we will discuss, inshallah, Thursday, is whether we use ahad hadith in aqidah. By now, I mean, the answer to that should be very clear. If it's part of the Quran, at least to Ibn Yaqini, there can be no doubt that you use it in aqidah. But we'll discuss the argument of those who say you do not use it, just for fun.
Are there any ahad hadith related to Athena?
Sure, many ahad hadith, yes. Yes, sure. Sure. طيب. Any question in the last? طيب, subhanakallah.